He was literally changing the landscape with good things from God. Powerful things of God. Is that works of power? Yeah. And he's doing all these things. Feet are probably still wet from walking on them waves. And the big guns come from Jerusalem. We're gonna see about this. He's out there and he's healing and he's teaching, doing all this stuff. And all of a sudden, catch him red-handed. Gotcha now. They might have missed it, but I saw it, man. It was subtle. You might not have been watching, but I saw when his disciples ate their food. Do you realize they never washed their hands? I gotcha now, Jesus. Oh, you thought you were bad, but you slipped up. You should have never come against me. Boy, I always get my man. I got you now, man. I saw Peter, I saw John, and I saw Bartholomew too, eating that food with unwashed hands. Yeah, they sprinkled a little water, but they didn't do it like the elders do it. They didn't get rid of none of that junk, none of that defilement. Just like Captain Binghamton in McHale's Navy. I got you now, McHale. Dating myself. All right, Phineas and Ferb. You know, the sister that comes around after everything goes on. She's like, I got you now. I'm telling Mom. And she tells Mom, and what happens? It's all gone. But I got you now. You didn't wash your hands, boy. I knew you were from the devil. I knew none of that stuff was of God, boy. I got you with the goods. Man. Now, let me just explain. They're not talking about hygiene, okay? Obviously, man, you know you're walking around on, you know, mucked up roads where animals have, you know, and whatever. You know, yeah, you want to wash your hands. I mean, you don't want to get, like, tapeworms or, you know, parasites. But they said they don't eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, because they're not talking about, you know, just hygiene. They're talking about spiritual defilement. They're talking about literally becoming spiritually unclean. And this is what they did. See, they felt like if your hands aren't purified, ceremonially pure, and you touch food, and then you stick that food in your body, man, your whole body is defiled. Man, you just might as well hang it up at that point. You're in bad shape. And so what they would do is this. They would wash their hands with their hands up. Pour water on that one, pour water on that one. Because it had to run down to the wrist. If water didn't run down to the wrist, your hand was still defiled. You got all the way down to the curl of your thumb, but it didn't touch your wrist. Boy, that's too bad, man. You left a doorway wide open, man. That corruption and defilement is still there. So they would wash and hold their hands up to make sure it got down to the wrist. But then they had a problem. Because the water they poured on it, what's that? Yeah, they couldn't touch the pitcher. So they're running around like this. The water that touched those defiled hands is now defiled. So they have to wash off the water that washed off the defilement. So then they would put their hands down and run water over their hands, so the water that they had originally washed, which would run off on the ground. And so they figured by the second time around, that was close enough. Then you were probably safe. But they were obsessed with this stuff, and they did this to their cups and their pitchers, their couches, you know. They felt that, you know, if there was a chance, you were taking a chance. If you didn't do that before you ate, because you might have touched a dead body somewhere. You never know. You know, maybe the guy, maybe you thought he was alive. Maybe you thought he was mostly dead, but the dude was dead. Now you're defiled. You might have touched a Gentile. He looked like a Jew, but no, he was actually a Gentile. You couldn't check his, you know, genealogy. And some of the stricter sects of the Jews and the Pharisees had so many rules that they had piled up about the various things that could make you spiritually defiled simply by touching them, that it almost got to the point where you could, any involuntary movement on your part could literally defile you. And so they were paralyzed. They were obsessed with this stuff. They carried water everywhere they went. Anytime they wanted to eat, they already had the water prepared, set aside, so they could go through all these ablutions, all these kinds of cleansings and things. One sect even taught that there was a demon named Shibta, that whenever you slept, the demon would come and defile your hands. So if you woke up and you didn't go through the ceremonial cleansing, when you ate food, you were getting demon-possessed by this Shibta dude, whatever he was. They had one rabbi that said it is better. He actually wrote it in their traditions. It is better to walk 4 miles out of your way to get water than to risk defilement by eating with unwashed hands. There was actually a case of a rabbi who got arrested for something, I don't know, but he was in prison and they gave him a daily ration of water to drink, just enough to keep him alive because they weren't, you know, really bleeding hearts back then. And instead of drinking that water to keep himself alive, he used it to wash his hands ceremonially so his food wouldn't be defiled when he ate it. Because he said, it's better to die. It's better to keel over and drop dead than to eat without washing my hands. Wouldn't my mother be proud of him? Did you wash your hands, son? Yeah. Are you kidding? I'd rather die than eat without washing my hands. I even washed behind my ears. Check it out. Look at that. That was the situation. And they were caught up in these traditions and these rules and these regulations and these straitjackets instead of the liberating power of the Word of God. And that's what religion does. It just heaps burdens on your back until it crushes you beneath the weight of your obligations. It creates false guilt and then does nothing to alleviate it. It's powerless. Religion has you spinning your wheels because it heaps guilt upon guilt upon guilt upon guilt and then sets an impossible paradigm for you to follow to get any kind of relief. And all it does is bring you into bondage. Religion, dead religion, cannot cleanse your soul of defilement. I remember we were riding up to the men's retreat, and Gus was regaling us with stories of his youth. And he told us about one time when he was a boy, young man, he went to Geno's. How many people remember Geno's? All right. I found out something new. I found out that was owned by a dude that played for the Colts, right? Geno Marquette. Yeah, what he said. I never knew that. I ate at Geno's thousands of times, hundreds, whatever. So Gus went to Geno's because the boy wanted a hamburger. He had gotten a hold of some money, and he was just like, man, I can taste it in my mouth. I want it so bad. And he goes to Geno's, and I guess it was a Geno Giant maybe, or, huh? Regular hamburger, okay. Regular hamburger, biting into this bad boy, just enjoying the juices oozing out of that thing. Man, this is great. And he's halfway through it, and all of a sudden, a terrifying thought strikes his soul like ice. It's Friday. Oh, and you were Roman Catholic? Dennis, is that bad? It's bad news, buddy. Yeah. He ate meat on Friday. And Gus said, this terror struck my heart. In his young mind, he says, I'm going to hell. I am going straight to hell. He had his bicycle. He had ridden his bike to Geno's. True story, kid you not. And Gus, thank you for letting me share this, brother. I'll get your permission after the service. I've done it now. I'm going to hell. I don't know. I asked him, did you finish the burger? He's like, no, I didn't even finish the burger. I went straight to the church. I did not ride my bike. I walked it because I didn't want to risk getting in an accident and getting killed and perishing forever beneath the flames. Walked my bike to church, went to confession, and cleansed my soul of that Geno's burger, boy. Because he was defiled. Oh, Gus, you weren't defiled, brother. And if you were, that wouldn't have helped a bit. Now he knows, though. Now he knows the truth. Oh my goodness, I'm glad I never went through that. Oh. Those things do nothing to defile a soul. and they do nothing to lift the defilement. What things do defile a soul? The things which outcome out of the heart of man. Adulteries, fornications, sexual immorality. In whatever form that comes, fantasies, actions, betrayals. Those things defile a soul. We talked about that extensively this weekend. How we are to be gatekeepers in our homes and in our lives, and yet we let in the gates all kinds of things that ought not to be there. Adulteries, fornications, murders. Jesus said, if you hate your brother, I'm sorry, the word in 1 John says, if you hate your brother, you're a murderer. That hatred, that animosity, that hostility, that bitterness, that rage defiles a man. Thefts and covetousness. Covetousness is basically greed. The Bible says that death and hell are never full, and so are the eyes of man. Your eyes are never full. They're never satisfied. As soon as you get the object of your desire, you've been waiting for that thing and waiting for that thing, and finally God gives you grace and you get it. The month is barely out before you're looking for something else. Well, man, yeah, I finally got my Barbie. Now I need the car. Now I need the house. Now I need the DVD. Then you watch, it's like, well, no, I shouldn't have had that. Thefts and covetousness. I don't understand, God, why he got that stuff. He doesn't even believe in you. How come you're blessing him? How come that atheist over there has a Jag in the driveway? How come he has a 6-bedroom house with 2 acres of ground, and I'm stuck here in this trailer in the midst of, I don't know, Henderson, and I can't even get my old Ford Pinto started? Well, yeah, I know. That thing didn't start when you bought it. So what are you complaining about? You should have bought a Nissan or a Toyota. Thefts, covetousness, and it makes us bitter. And it defiles our soul. Wickedness, deceit, the lies we tell defile our soul. When we don't have integrity and speak the truth. It's better to speak the truth gently, humbly, in love than to lie. You don't do anything for someone lying to them. Deceit. Lewdness. The dirty jokes. The profanity. The innuendos. The stuff that goes on in job place after job place in the marketplace. I mean, some places on the job, there's nothing subtle about it. I remember walking in one time to an auto parts store. I needed something, and one employee was talking to the other one, and I thought I had heard it all. Boy, I discovered I had not heard it all. Man! And they live with that every day. Man! And I'll tell you, I've negotiated with attorneys. I have been cussed by the best. Boy, I have been cussed. I have been good and cussed. But when I walked out of that auto parts store, I was like, man, that guy ought to go to law school. He would be great. Lewdness. Wickedness, deceit, lewdness. An evil eye. An evil eye, which is like envy. You tell somebody, oh, I'm so happy for you. And inside you're just looking at it like, you don't deserve that. Why do you get that? I was taught how women look at each other by someone at work. They say they give you the look where, you know, you're walking by and she thinks she's all that, and so you just kind of look up and go down and then look back up again. It's like, yeah, as if. The evil eye. Pair of evil eyes, man. It's the look.